welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Well, folks, it is now or never. We are running out of time, but I have to admit, I am pleased. I'm happy to discover more and more people out there. I've discovered a young man he's running for a clerk's position in Utah. And I know there are others out there that are looking to focus on the Constitution. Now, they're not completely where I myself think they need to be. And, you know, I'm not the king, but I like being right, and I know a lot of people love being right. But when it really comes down to being constitutional, you can't split your loyalties. You can't split your loyalty to the party and be constitutional, because that only becomes problematic because the party is not constitutional. And what you end up doing is you end up compromising. And I think that this young man and other, you know, younger people that are getting involved in politics today are, I think, in the right position. The problem is that if they don't start really diving more into, because once they get into office and they stop really, I'll say, discovering and diving into and learning about the Constitution, they will quickly learn about the status quo. They'll learn about the swamp. They'll learn about how it's done. So there was a person that was running for city council in some small little suburb town in California that I was talking to. And I believe that this person is going to be getting ready to start a candidacy on the basically a campaign on the Constitution, and actually start running for, or preparing to run based on this campaign, for a county commissioner in Riverside County. Now, Riverside County it's a very conservative, because it means it's not constitutional, but they could be easily led down that path. It's just a matter of the lack of leadership is the real problem. And so when we're finding people that are willing to take the standard position, then they're closest to the positions of leadership to be able to lead people down that path. The problem is we need to make sure that they're facing that path and walking down that path. If not, if they're walking down the conservative path, then, okay, they may have a long career in politics because that's what people want. People want you to worry about the little issues. They don't care about winning the war. They only care about, you know, school. They only care about these little myopic issues, while we continue to ratchet up our debt, continue to leverage ourselves, sell ourselves out to foreign entities, so forth and so on. So we're going to dive into what we've been talking about as far as how it really took two parties in the ratcheting away of our liberties and ratcheting tyranny to be successful. And so we've kind of laid that groundwork. And I've kind of shown you, and I will kind of do a quick overview of what we have shown you. But before we do, it's the day before the election. And if you're planning, if you're going to send some contributions to Paul Venable's campaign to basically let him carry that over into the campaign on the Constitution, and he's already kind of looking at what it's going to take to do a discovery campaign or what have you, for running in the U.S. Senate again, basically challenging Josh Hawley. And so maybe I got the name wrong, but we'll see. Anyway, now would be the time. Now would be a great time before the campaign is over. What we're hoping to do is we're hoping to start adding to this list of constitutional champions and actually start letting you know about the campaigns on the Constitution that are kicking off hopefully soon. It's just a matter of getting people to understand what to do, and the the big fundamental foundation, there's a big fundamental, the foundation, the bedrock of these campaigns is the First Amendment petitions and going through what we would call a long and consistent barrage of petitions against our public servants of how they are violating the Constitution. We want to get it to the point, folks, that those people, those tyrants, that don't care about your liberties, they only care about their careers and everything else, we want to pummel them to a point where they don't even have the energy to muster in the filing for re-election, that they just, you know what, I'm not even going to do it because I've just been pummeled by everybody in my county for so long, and they're making it worse because I'm not going to do what they want me to do. That's what we want. We would love to see them actually resign. We would love to see them actually do what they should do, which should be resign, or give us the power. See, this is all about demanding the power to remove public servants from public office. We have to have that power. It is the supreme law of the land, period. So when they create these rules that, you know, require ethics, when they have these rules of impeachment, when the Constitution changed in the 14th Amendment, where public servants, if they violate their oath, they have to be removed, that eliminates their ability to impeach themselves when it comes to specific violations of the oath of office. Unethical character or unethical behavior, those types of character flaws, that type of stuff, okay, that's something different. But if they're violating their oath of office, then they do not need to be impeached. They need to be removed. This is why we need to demand this power be given and granted and delegated to us, the people, to ensure that we can actually make sure that any public servant that is in office proves how they are living and defending and supporting that Constitution. So as you know, the show is also sponsored by republicreview.org, and you're listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions for what we need to do to getting our constitutional republic back on the track that the framers put us on. Now, I'm going to dive into, because I'm not going to worry about promos and those other types of things, but what I want to dive into is and actually, let me do a go back, because some of the things I'm going to get back into, and we're actually going to, hopefully, we should have time today to kind of take a glance at where we're going in the next few weeks before now and the end of the year, because we've just got 2 months to go. But there's a lot of content we need to jam in, and I'm going to cover that stuff for you so that you can go, wow, okay, because I'm going to make my case. I believe in making irrefutable arguments so that you go, there's nothing else we can do. This is what we have to do. We have to work towards Republic Review. Anyway, so a couple of things I want to constantly circle back around and looking at where we are is, and the key here is this: what kind of president does America really deserve, and what type of president does America need? Because the campaign for the presidency shall begin. The presidential runs actually do start this time of year, and they'll start laying out their explorations and should I's and who cares. Folks, if we don't start making campaigns on the Constitution, because that's the only way we're going to get other people to start listening and focusing in that direction, right? So the other thing I want to kind of keep circling around is these rights, because what I wanted to do to follow up the Constitution and to follow up this is I'd like to get back to the Bill of Rights of 2022. What is that specifically? The Bill of Rights for the 21st Century is out on our Take Action page. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the Take Action page. And it's probably, I think, the third document down, but it'll say right there a comprehensive positions to campaign on for county, state, and federal elections, something like that. The file name is the Bill of Rights for 2022. So we'll need to probably change that file name to the Bill of Rights for the 21st century. But bottom line, if you start going through that, we've exposed all of the different petitions that are due to be done. I mean, these are things that we need to start petitioning in restoring and demanding that our public servants start addressing these issues. So we're going to try to circle back around to that. But more importantly, what we want to do is we need to get through some of the academic arguments, or I should say the academic proof that supports our arguments, like treason. What is treason? And we're going to get into that. What is property? When we talk about government protecting property, what is that? And we also, I can't emphasize enough, we need to focus and continually bring up the fact that we delegate power. In other words, in our constitutions, we need to be very careful what powers we delegate, because if we delegate a power to our government, if we concede, we the people concede, then we are opening up a big can of worms. With that, before we bleed into the actual promos, we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so when we started going through the, I'll just say the violations, the sideswipes, the directions that were not constitutional, this is where we actually can see how we went from two disparate parties, basically having two opposing positions, to morphing over time into a uniparty. And so what we want to do is, and we're going to actually go through some of these, but what we want to do is kind of lay it out that when in the very beginning, there was really only, there were two positions. And there was the Federalist and the Anti-Federalist. And the Anti-Federalist, many of them, you'd think that they didn't get a chance to actually go into office in George Washington's first term, and that's not true. As a matter of fact, Patrick Henry made sure he handpicked the two senators that would represent Virginia. He also played around with the, what do you call that? The district maps. You know how we talk about gerrymandering, where Eldridge Gerry, actually it should be gerrymandering, but Eldridge Gerry played around with the boundaries of, you know, who was to be represented, or the congressional districts, legislative districts, and so forth, to ensure that the outcome would favor a very specific party. And so what we did, what actually Patrick Henry did, was something that Eldridge Gerry took a lesson from. And in all honesty, and giving credit due to, you know, probably the first in America that was the most maniacal at doing that, it should be Henry Mandarin, if you understand what I'm saying. But there's a lot of people that love Patrick Henry because, yes, he was a huge anti-British, you know, sovereignty type of person. But when it came down to this, the giving the federal government the necessary powers, then this is where we find that, you know, Patrick Henry was more concerned about protecting the cabal of the state than he was about becoming a part of this bigger, grander experiment of a hybrid distribution of liberty, a hybrid distribution of powers and representations and so forth. And so, unfortunately, there were many good men, and I can't emphasize this enough. There were lots of really good men that did not understand the Constitution. And so, therefore, what they ended up doing was they ended up going down these paths of compromising and trampling on the Constitution in the early days. And so one of the very first things, and now let me hold back here, I'll pull this back and make one more clarification. There were a few operatives in America that understood, they found these small little portals in the Constitution that they could start playing with. In other words, using this concept of implied powers. There's nowhere during the ratification debates that it was admitted or even asserted that implied powers, as a matter of fact, it was denied when the anti-federalists came out and said, oh, well, they're going to imply these things. The Federalists came right back and said, no, we cannot imply powers. If it is not enumerated, it cannot be, you know, exercised. It cannot be a power. Anyway, so Alexander Hamilton, John Marshall, and those men who wanted to aggrandize federal powers, they were the first to actually take wax at the Constitution. And so as we look at the very first, let's just say all the way up to the Missouri Compromise. Prior to the Missouri Compromise, we did not see kind of a unified effort. And so there was I'll say there had to have been a divide between John Quincy Adams, and I don't know because I've never studied the man, and what I have studied of James Monroe. Because I know James Monroe was not a real anti-slavery person. He was a pro-liberty person, but he wasn't repelled by the idea that slavery existed. Now, one of the things that here's the confusion, and I'm going to throw it out here for you. James Monroe was the man that actualized Jefferson's plan in repatriating freemen from America back to Africa. In other words, he was the one that finally, I mean, Madison and Monroe, while Madison was in office, Madison and Monroe were basically working to buy land in Africa, which they did. They bought land on the western coast, which is where Liberia is today, And Liberia is called Liberia because of, you know, the whole point of providing liberty, because they didn't want to just throw freemen back into Africa. They wanted to give them their own government and everything else. So America actually went to some great lengths in trying to create a society back to Africa for the blacks, because that's where they wanted to go. They didn't want to be in America anymore. And could you blame them? Some of the harsh winters and all of that, where Liberia is a very nice situated place, very tropical. Anyway, as we look at Monroe being involved in doing that, in protecting the liberties of the freemen in America and helping them explore and become a society of liberty right back in Africa, and supporting and protecting them, you know, there was a tie and a relationship between the United States and Liberia. And so the repatriating of blacks back to Liberia was something very significant. Why do you think they called the capital Monrovia? After James Monroe. But here's the conflict. James Monroe, you know, on one hand was doing that, and on the other, he allowed the Missouri Compromise. He allowed states to lose their self-destiny of being able to become self-determinant of what they wanted to be and where they wanted to go. And instead, he signed off on the concept that states that came into the Union at a certain latitude on the earth, they would be destined to be slave states. And I'm going, you've got to be kidding me. Why in the heck did he do that? You know, I hate to say I look forward to the day I die, because I've got a lot of questions. I've got a lot of questions for a lot of people. Why did they do that? And you know what? I understand that, having not walked in their shoes and only having the limited information that we have, there may be some underlying things that help them justify what they were doing. Or you got to also look at it this way. Their paradigms were a lot different. You know, when America started shedding slavery, this was a whole new paradigm. This was a change, because even in Dutch Amsterdam, in the Holland, and those northern European states that had no slavery, even in those states, they recognized human slavery as a legal accepted practice. They didn't indulge in it. They didn't use it. But when you came up, so it's not like what ended up becoming Wisconsin. It's not like what ended up happening in the northern states of America, when all of a sudden, you know, slave owners would take their slaves with them up north, and next thing you know, they would disappear, or there were efforts in trying to free them, or, you know, help them run away. And the northern states actually became very active in trying to get rid of slavery with, you know, the abolition movement. That's the word I was looking for, the abolition movement and so forth. But there wasn't an effort by Holland and the other people of the northern part of Europe to do that. They completely accepted it. So, as you can see, there are all these varying paradigms to say, well, you know, to each their own, right? And in America, because we kind of learned at that point in time that this was a bad thing, well, what we didn't learn is obviously that people could become, you know, even more maniacal, or they can continue their antics by becoming racist and separatist and all these other problems. You know, even though we solved one problem, we walked smack dab into the middle of another problem. But anyway, back to this whole separation of politics. The Federalists and the Anti-Federalists were definitely diametrically opposed parties. The interesting thing was that the Federalists were taken over by the Anti-Federalists, and then the Federalists became the big government party within a few years. Because what ended up happening was they started accepting. I mean, everybody that Henry sent into office, they became, you know, big aggrandizers of the federal government. So the paradigm started permeating this big government of this cabal, trying to have all the powers, cabal, in Virginia and all these other states. Well, when I tell people that the best and brightest went into the first, you know, session of Congress, well, to be honest with you, these were those who were, you know, coming from the state cabals. And what do you think that they would gravitate towards? You know, you would think that they would have said, oh, no, this is something new. But no, they went right back to what they knew, and what they knew was cabals and aggrandizing power. We'll be right back after these two promos.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so the two parties, as we kind of went through all of this, they morphed more and more towards the willingness to allow compromise. So in other words, once compromise, once ground was given up, whether it be to one party or to the other, that ground was lost altogether to the people. If government basically sold the people downriver, then the people were so far away from the shore, the banks of the river, that there was no getting back. We've never today. Now, back in those days, they would just kind of push you off from the banks and, you know, they were actually able to get back to the banks and slowly fight their way back up to where they were to undoing some things. Some things never got undone. Some things did get undone. To this day, we have transitioned from a point to where we accept our position in the river and we're just floating down towards the big ocean of compromise. And we, just to be clear, the Constitution does not allow parties to compromise your liberties, parties to grant them the authority to violate the Constitution. There's no compromise allowed in the Constitution, period. So as we went through all these different, we'll call them transitions and powers and usurpations and so forth from the the progressives are actually in the 1800s. It went back and forth towards what we would consider noble, or what actually George Washington called noble usurpations. And he pointed out that noble usurpations were customarily those things that led to the destruction of a government, right? So over time, we saw how it had gone from these noble things to outright attacks on the Constitution. The outright attacks on the Constitution really began at the end of the 19th century. Teddy Roosevelt was one of the big ones. And then we saw the Progressive Era, and the Progressive Era amendments, there were the Progressive Era amendments, but there was also Progressive Era usurpations. And so we have now crossed over that bridge to where we see in America, you know, some of the things that we've seen, you know, that we noticed these changes. But I'm telling you that when we look at who gave us, you know, the fiat currency, that may have been a Republican, but that was a communist. Nixon was a communist. Why do you think Nixon kowtowed to China and actually gave them most favored nation status so that over time we would build on the American, at the expense of America, on the bank of America, we would subsidize them financially as well. And so as we moved away from the dollar standard and started creating these little things called, you know, the National Education, the EPA, there are all sorts of just evil things that were being created. And people go, oh, this is good, this is good. No, none of it was good, folks. None of it was good. And it was all, even though it may have seemed benign, or what some people thought, oh, and I pointed this out, the CRA, the Community Reinvestment Act by Carter, or the Equal Employment Opportunities by Reagan, equal housing opportunities, those types of things, folks, they may have seemed benign, but look at them now and how the federal government is exploiting all of these things. Show me where the constitutional groups out there, because you got, you know, Western Lands, you've got the Second Amendment, you've got all of these different organizations, conservative organizations fighting over myopic issues. Where are the issues that are fighting the equal employment opportunity, or fighting the Department of Transportation, or fighting the equal housing opportunity? There are way too many things that you have gone to accustomed to and have accepted and don't think that it's a threat anymore. And I'm telling you, it is still being used as a tool and a weapon against us and our liberty and sovereignty. Because we've allowed ourselves to swim in the political waters of division. And when I say division, I mean allowing ourselves to focus on, you know, the purple water of education and the problems with, you know, a very specific problem, instead of actually saying, hey, this education department is unconstitutional. By taking the high ground, by actually diving into the Constitution, instead of diving into these myopic waters, these myopic issues, we have allowed ourselves to embrace tyranny on all these other aspects that you don't find the same passion for, but they're equally as unconstitutional as the water or the issue you have dived into. This is a fool's errand. And this is why America, the people, are the problem. Because they don't understand that by standing up for the Constitution, it would have resolved the issues of racism. Standing up on the Constitution, it would resolve all of your educational problems. It resolves every problem, because the federal government can't be centrally manipulating all of us on all of these things. So when we start looking at the design, and I'm going to basically just quickly reference the articles that I've written, I've written a few articles over the course of the past couple of years. All of these have been designed to help educate you on the design of the Constitution. What is the real problem? Is something that's very focused on the enumerated powers, enumerated jurisdictions, enumerated roles, responsibilities. And one of the things I didn't include in this was enumerated properties. But clearly, the properties are enumerated. And by not including that, I kind of allowed myself to, you know, marginalize these things called federal property and federal usurpations of state land. So this is why I wrote a separate article that is called The Jurisdictional Limitation of the Federal Government's Jurisdiction. And what it really is it's all about federal property in the enumerations of property. So when you look at what is the real problem, I hone in on all of the issues that we're facing, and they all have one common thread. The government that is involved in these at the, both the federal and state level is all unconstitutional. And so, you know, you got to understand one thing, folks, that when government does something, they create an office, instantly they allocate a budget to pay for that one person that that sits there and occupies that office. But it's usually not one person. It's a bunch of people, because offices all of a sudden start aggrandizing their roles, and they go, oh, we can do so much more. We can do so much better. And so next thing you know, you create these huge bureaucracies, and that costs money. Those people don't work for free. Their compensation packages, retirement, and all of those things, those definitely aren't free. But here's the thing. It's all fraud. In other words, they didn't have the power to do it and create it in the first place. You want to understand what it takes to become public enemy number one. When you can actually prove that millions of people have pensions and millions of people have jobs that are illegitimate, and technically we can shut them down and they wouldn't get a penny because there is no legal standing for them to be able to claim this benefit. Because it was all done on a facade that the government had the authority to do this. Now, we're not just talking about 1 million. We're talking about millions of people. We're also looking at the public debt. And when we look at the public debt and what a facade it is, now we realize, wow, that takes public enemy number one to world enemy, or the, you know, enemy of the societies of the world, because everybody is all on board with the selling out of America so that they can trample and basically assume the promised land. America is the promised land. Israel may have that in the Bible, but when it comes to governing resources and everything else, America is the promised land, as far as I'm concerned. And so when we look at all of the things that, you know, they're doing, and we expose all of this fraud, then you can start realizing that we now have, you know, a critical mass. But in my articles, I really lay out, and I didn't start off with this. This epiphany of this immune system came to me in the past couple months. And so bottom line, what we need to do is we need to start understanding how the system is supposed to work. Because when we realize how the system is supposed to work, we will actually see the immune system of this government kick in. Because if we are doing what we're supposed to do, then the rest of the immune system will work. This is why I've been harping and harping on this little concept that we are the problem for diving into these myopic waters, these myopic issues. We're the problem. We need to back out, and the only thing we need to be chanting is full compliance to the Constitution. That doesn't mean that the things you really think are important aren't important. What it means is the most important thing is the Constitution and full compliance to it. We'll be right back after these two promos.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so as we're kind of laying out this design, so going back to these articles, there were four articles that I've written, and the fifth one I'm in the process of writing. And actually, the fifth one is really more of a book. And so we'll talk about how these things will morph out. But what you really need to do is you really need to read what is the real problem. Oh, where are these articles? These articles will be found on reclaimingtherepublic.org. And the first article, what is the real problem, is, and all of these are on the constitutional articles page, except for that jurisdictional limitation of the federal government. That is on the constitutional perspectives page. That will be moving quickly, hopefully quickly, over to the constitutional articles page, and that will be replaced by this long article that I'm writing regarding your First Amendment right of petition. Now, what is the real problem really lays out the enumerated powers and even lays out what the Bill of Rights did. The Bill of Rights only applied these rights that we were to be protected from the federal government. In other words, the Bill of Rights did not apply to the states. The people were subjected to all sorts of tyranny and all sorts of manipulations by the state government. And the federal government itself was to basically keep its hands off of the people. It had no authority to meddle in any of these things, marriage, religion, or what have you. And there have been times, several times, where religion, marriage, and those types of things, the federal government was begged by the people in the states, hey, you've got to get involved. You've got to do something. You have the ability to do something here. So anyway, when we start going through these, or when you start going through these articles, you're going to realize that these checks and balances that you've heard of are, and how they've been designed, are integral to the immune system. If you understand the immune system, your whole body is this sensor of, you know, what is, you know, as things are functioning right, then great. As soon as something foreign comes into it, it says, hey, I don't think this belongs here. And then if the brain starts communicating what that cell or cells need to do to fight that particular object. If you have a foreign object in your body, whether that be a little metal sliver or even a wood sliver, your body reacts to it and will react to it very differently. Now, wood will fester out. Metal sometimes festers in to where your body kind of encases this metal in protecting the body from it. And so it's the immune system is amazing in how it operates. It's not like you're going, okay, now I'm going to start thinking about the cells in my finger to react a certain way. This stuff happens second nature. It is programmed within your DNA and within your brain. Everybody's bodies are built the same way. Now, when we look at our constitution, when it comes down to who is supposed to enforce the Constitution, well, the Constitution says the militia, but what does that mean? What that means is we, the people, have the responsibility to serve as the militia to ensure the enforcement of the Constitution be legitimate. In other words, we're the ultimate checks on the Constitution. We're the ultimate checks on the federal government. And so when we're functioning, so when they started passing these, you know, amendments and some of these laws and so forth, we were the ones that were supposed to stand up and say, hey, I'm not going to enforce this law. And as a matter of fact, what we should have been doing was we should have been going to our county commissioners and say, we're not going to have anything to do with this. And you need to tell the state legislators that they need to actually start working appropriately in dealing with this. So the appropriate process is actually working within the compact. Now, this is why we're going to get into the Virginia resolutions, because we're going to talk about that process. But what I want you to understand is if you read these articles, then you'll actually start seeing how everything kind of, you know, naturally follows through to where the federal government doesn't even have the authority to declare martial law. Now, you hear all sorts of people that are claiming that the federal government declared martial law and they've done all of these terrible things. You're hearing people talking about, you know, I forget all the crap that they've done, but there was this Organic Act of 1871. There are all of these different things that are outright violations of the Constitution. And the problem is that there are people telling you that these things are legitimate. The sovereign citizen movement is telling you this has all been done legitimately. No, it's not. The federal government never had the authority to do those things. They never had the authority to sign into this thing called the UN to subjugate us. Everything that they have been doing in aggrandizing their powers and managing and manipulating us is all unconstitutional. So while you're over there fighting for your Second Amendment rights, and we're seeing ourselves when all of a sudden we've got a bunch of foreign stormtroopers and everything else, and at least you're running around your house like you're taking a victory lap, saying, at least I still have my gun. Really? Seriously? You've allowed us to perceive, or I should say, you've allowed this nation to slip so far into the swamp that you're going to consider that a victory when we've lost everything. Folks, now or never. It is now or never. This is why there's a lot of things that we want to cover. But if you start understanding who we're supposed to keep, you know, checks on, it's not just government per se. It is specifically our representatives. And if everybody does our job and does their job, then what I'm trying to say is if we're actually holding our public servants accountable, they will be holding each other accountable. And they will, because it is their job, they are duty bound to ensure every public servant is supporting the Constitution. As Madison says, they're duty bound to arrest the evil. If the evil is coming from AOC or the little mob that she's a part of, then why is it that nobody has arrested her and kicked her and her mob out of government? Clearly, they're violating the Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. They are obligated to support the Constitution. They have no authority whatsoever to try to subvert it, and that everything that they're doing is subverting the Constitution. when it comes down to the invasion, all of these things, folks, it's when you really start realizing if you're doing your job, they have to do theirs. And it's not about asking them to preserve your Second Amendment rights. It's about you asking them to preserve every aspect of that Constitution and to fully comply to it. Quit wasting everybody's time. Quit being divisive, because everybody out there that wants to dive into these myopic issues and doesn't want to understand the full scope and the full magnitude of where their problems are really coming from, then we need to set them straight. We need to help these people, you know, come, let's use the term, come to Jesus. They need to come to the Constitution and the Constitution that he gave us and actually start living by the law of the land. Then we can start changing our society from a debased society and a godless secular society to a virtuous, enlightened society, one that embraces the discipline of doing good things and doing those moral things and actually turning the corner. We can't force people into a religion, into a faith or anything else, but we can create an enlightened society, and we can demand full compliance to our Constitution and the supreme law of the land. We are a republican form of government, which means we are the rule of law. And it is that simple. It is that simple. Now, one of the things I found out, and I'll get into this maybe some other time, that, you know, it came to my attention that the John Birch Society has somewhat co-opted some of my concepts, and they're kind of running tangent down these rat holes with these ideas, but they are not trying to embrace the real concept behind what I've talked about. Now, I'll get into that details later, but what I need to do really right now is to help talk about what we're going to be talking about. So tomorrow being election day, I think it's a perfect day to get back into some content. And so tomorrow we're going to talk about the Assumptions Act. And then on Wednesday, maybe we're going to focus on the election. I think that, you know, there's lots of people that, you know, want to actually talk about it, but I'm only going to talk at the real high level. I'm not going to give you the analysis, because bottom line, it's going to take a little bit of time to figure out where things have landed, what's really happening, because I'm going to tell you, don't be surprised that all of a sudden things change, because that's what's been happening. What really matters is that we start going after public servants at the local level, because the only way you're going to clean up your state and your state elections is by demanding your local level be constitutionally compliant. This is how we do it, folks, because the state, I can tell you, even in these dark red states, they're equally corrupt. There's the swamps in every state. You got to drain the swamp, and you have to basically literally displace the swamp in your own backyard, which means your county, and start cleaning up all of your local government. Make sure your sheriff absolutely supports his oath of office and so forth. So we're going to cover the Assumption Act and the cod fishery bounties. We might get into Madison's property this week. We'll talk more about the curriculum coming up as we move forward. Just so you know, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org
and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.